Introducing CRS Radio Motown Legends and Alumni with Motown Alumni President, Association President, Mr. Billy Wilson, and Motown Alumni Association former recording artist, Mr. Billy Tappan.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome tonight. Welcome, Billy. How are you doing this evening?
God is always good to me.
Man, another day in paradise, my man. So, you know, tonight we're going to talk about the truth and the lies behind Motown, which Billy's going to bring to the table. It's going to be very, very interesting. And it's going to be some factual stuff here that maybe a lot of people got misconstrued on what they've heard. But this guy right here definitely knows the history of what really went on behind the scenes. Okay, so now we're going to introduce Billy Wilson. Billy Wilson, you got the floor.
Well, all right, all right. Hello, everybody. Thank you for being here. I certainly have been interested in wanting to talk about all of the confusing information that pertained to Motown. I've been wanting to talk about this for years, so this is a great opportunity for me to do that. I've done it with numerous lectures and numerous seminars, but to do it on a public platform like this is very, very rare. So let's take it from the very beginning. One of the things people don't know about Berry Gordy is that at one point in time, he had a record shop. And he also liked jazz. He was not really a great fan of R&B, but his biggest, the music that he appreciated the most was jazz. And his record shop pretty much sold jazz records. The problem was, as R&B was growing, jazz wasn't quite as popular as it used to be. That's probably the biggest reason why the shop had to close. But rock and roll was becoming popular. They called it R&B at that time. You know, they called it race. They called our music race music at that time. But Berry Gordy was an entrepreneur of the smallest degree at first. His sister Gwen and Billy Raquel met the people from Jackie Wilson's organization, and they brought Berry in, and Berry Gordy wrote the first couple of hits, many of the hits that you hear on Jackie Wilson's recordings. Lonely Teardrops, numerous songs of that nature. He was very prominent in helping to push that type of music at that time. Even though he loved jazz, you know, he had a good feel for the music genre. And that's also where he met Smokey. They were auditioning for groups at Boot Records. And Smokey's group, the Matadors, came in and they auditioned. They didn't make the auditions, but as they were walking out the door, Barry kind of seen something in them. So he went chasing after them. And he asked, you know, Smokey whether he had more songs. Smokey, well, yeah, Smokey had his binder of hundreds of songs. And Barry looked through them, took the time to look through them. And he said, yeah, okay, I can see a structure here. And that structure ended up being a part of the whole Motown sound as time had gone on.
No, that's pretty amazing, awesome. Really.
It is.
That's amazing because I didn't know that part of it. All I knew was that the Jackie Wilson and the Smokey situation, but now we're going to where it originated from, and a lot of people don't know this, so I'm throwing it right back to you. So,
yeah,
continue.
Well, you know, what was funny is that Barry, during the time, Barry was somewhat popular in Detroit, particularly Detroit. And so Smokey had heard of Barry Gordy before, but he didn't, you know, obviously he didn't really know Barry. But they became close friends. Barry became the Matador's manager. And as time had gone on, eventually they changed their name to The Miracles. But what was interesting is that Barry was, when he finally got his first royalty check, you know, everybody celebrates the royalty check when you get the first one.
Right.
So when he opened when they finally opened the envelope, I think he had like, remember this Jackie Wilson's music. He had $3.
$3. Wow.
$3. And of course he was quite disappointed. And Smokey said, man, look, for $3, you could start your own company and make more money than that. And Barry agreed. So what he did was he started his own publishing company.
Okay.
And, you know, at first it was called Ray Bear. Eventually, it ended up being Jobette.
Remember that. I remember that.
Yeah. So his first record company was Tamla Records. Now, they had the name of Tamla because at that time of the song Tammy, I believe by Doris Day, the song Tammy was popular, and Barry Gordy liked that name. But somebody owned the name. So he ended up changing the name to portions of his kid's name, which ended up being Tamla Records.
Okay.
So in that he had this Tamla record label, his ex-wife, Raynoma, she was his business partner. She was actually the co-owner of Motown. Barry had a partner. and she was the co-owner. Miss Ray was very instrumental in studio production stuff. She helped with the background vocals. She helped with management. She had perfect pitch, hearing, and she could sing her butt off. And so it started the Ray Bear label and the Ray Bear Publishing Company, which is,
now, let me ask you
Ray Bear.
Let me ask you this, Billy. Now, with the Matador, which is Smokey's group, they were all one group, I imagine. But is there any song that we can recognize that our listeners could recognize from back in them days?
As the Matadors?
Yeah, as the Matadors.
Let me see. Did they record as the Matadors? I don't think they did.
Okay.
I think that they recorded as the Miracles.
Gotcha.
Oh.
And let me also say, in previous to the Matadors, they had a group called the Chimes.
The Chime?
And the Chime, C-H-I-M-E-S, the Chime.
Gotcha.
But eventually, members start quitting and it eventually ended up being the Miracle.
Okay.
Now, one of the other interesting parts is that Mark Tarplin, it was a keyboard player for the Miracles. You see him on the very first album cover. During that time, it was very popular to have your guitar player, in the picture.
Right.
But Mark Tarplin, he came from the Primettes. That the Primettes were the Supremes. When the Primettes auditioned for Motown, at first Barry told him, go back and get out of high school, and then you can come back after that. Which they did, but they came with Mark Tarplin, the guitar player. Well,
mm-hmm.
Smokey, they liked the Primettes. They were okay background singing and other things of that nature. But Marv was so good, he asked them, can he borrow a guitar player? Of course, they said, yes, sure, whatever you want. Well, he never went back to them. And he ended up being the co-writer for most of the hits that we know of the Miracles.
Oh.
Okay.
Wow.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Smokey's a fan of mine.
Also, in the process of Smokey creating his band, there are other people that were part of his group. They end up being significant in Motown's history. Joe Messina, the guitar player, the White Soul Brothers, that's what he used to call him. And he ended up being the guitar player for the Miracles. And Marvin Gaye was the drummer.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
Marvin was the drummer. He was one of their first drummers. And he went on the road with the Miracles, too, whenever they were performing. You know, it wasn't until later they found out he could sing. Then they find out not only can he play drums, he could play keyboard. And they found that out at a party one time. He was, you know, Marvin was kind of a recluse-ish type. You know, he was shy and he kind of stood by himself a lot. But he seen a piano. He got to sitting down and started playing, and people were like, whoa, this guy can play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So of course, he ended up writing most of his songs, and he performed those songs on keyboard on stage. Mm. You knew what songs were Marvin's songs because whenever he played on stage, that means he wrote the songs.
Wow.
Gotcha.
That's a gift.
Now, let me ask you this, Billy. Let me ask you this, not to cut you off, but let me ask you this. Is there any truth, and we can go back to what you're saying, but is there any truth that when Tammy Terrell died, I know it affected him. Was it the fact that he didn't perform anymore because of the death of her, that sabbatical?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Because,
so that is true.
You know, they were close. They were close friends. They weren't lovers, but they were friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
And both of them had, of course, they had an attraction to each other, but they kept their business.
Right.
But Tammy, she certainly looked up to him as almost like a big brother.
Gotcha. So,
and he looked at her like a little sister. So their friendship was so deep. It was so deep, and they enjoyed each other, and because they admired each other, both of them sexy, both of them had that appeal about them. Both of them really enjoyed each other's presence.
Well, they were a powerhouse, that's for sure. They were a powerhouse.
Yeah.
They were.
Yes,
and
they were.
So by the time she got sick, obviously it was on stage, and she collapsed on stage. Of course, nobody knew exactly what was happening. But it ended up being an aneurysm.
Oh.
Ooh.
And she lived a little bit after that and eventually died. So when she died, that was such a tremendous shock to him.
It was. It was.
Wow.
It messed him up.
That's
for years. I know that.
I mean, an aneurysm, you can't even begin to even know that anything like that is going to happen. That is,
right.
That's tragic.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And on that note, can we go into a commercial break at this time, and we'll come back with more of a Billy and Billy and the rest of this story, and we'll be back.
All right. We will return.
This is CRS Radio, the Knowledge Station. You are listening to Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy.
From author Dr. Denise Gotatis comes a self-help guide that will give you valuable information about the world around you in ways never imagined. The Metaphysical God in Relation to His Creation. Available on Amazon. In this must-read book, you will learn about your importance in the world and the metaphysical universe around you. You will be introduced to the Metaphysical God who has a relationship with you and those around you. Whether you are aware of this or not, you come into contact with Him daily. He is omnipresent metaphysically. He is in and and outside of his creation? And what does a metaphysical God have to do with you and the creation around you? You are a very big piece of a huge puzzle. The Metaphysical God in Relation to His Creator, from author Dr. Denise Gotatis, is available on Amazon. Order your copy right now.
Of your smile is everlasting. I can see the sunshine in your eyes. Lady, don't you know you're special? You're special girl to me in every way.
CRS Radio, the Knowledge Station. You are listening to Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy.
And we are back. That song was sung by Motown's recording artist, Goldie Love, also known as Billy Tapton. Welcome back to CRS Radio, Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy.
Yes, we're back. And let me make a correction. Actually, it's just that my private project, that wasn't Motown, but that was me. That was me, Goldie Love. And Billy, that was one of my releases from back in 88 that had Tim Cunningham on that as well. So the sax that you're hearing is Tim, and he guy's awesome. So let's go back to where we were coming from in terms of the truth and lies that we hear about Motown. So we were at the point where we're talking about Tammy Terrell. So let's pick up from that and move forward.
Well, I want to make it clear that Dave Ruffin did not hit Tammy Terrell in the head with a hammer, and neither did James Brown. She dated both of them. Now, mind you, that doesn't mean they didn't have physical fights, which they did, and there's this one incident that David that was told to me through a Richard Street that David Ruffin, him and David were, I guess they were going to eat somewhere, and this hotel that everybody was staying in, it had, the balcony was on the inside of the building. So when you went out on the balcony, you could see the area where people were socializing. So apparently Tammy wanted, she wanted David to come back because she wasn't finished arguing with him. So at first David was just, he's like, man, forget her. He kept on walking. So she said, either you come back or I'm going to jump off this balcony. He stopped. He said, man, wait a minute. He went back up to the room. They got into a big fight. He grabbed her and had her by both ankles and hanging her over the balcony. She's screaming and hollering and, you know, asking him to stop. Now, she was literally hanging, but he said that he looked between her legs and kept saying, maybe I shouldn't do this.
Okay.
He pulled her back up. They get to fighting again. And then he comes back downstairs. He said, Richard, he said, she's just too pretty.
Mm. Wow.
And he kept on walking. Now, oddly enough, the hotel people that seen the incident told the story. But eventually, David told the story too, as well as Richard Street. He told the same story. Everybody told the same story.
Okay. That's interesting.
But for sure, nobody got hit in the head with a hammer or anything of that nature. That was one of the myths of how Tammy got her brain, you know, damaged. And that wasn't the truth.
So where did that come from? That myth, it's just something just out of thin air, somebody just created that.
Who knows? There's always something and somebody that can come up with an alternative, you know, advantage perspective. There's always, I mean, just like John F. Kennedy's death, you know, people think that there was a second person to do the shooting, but no, that's neither here nor there.
Now, this right here with James Brown, you said she was messing around with James Brown. Was that a physical situation as well with Tammy?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, James used to beat her every now and then, and even to the point where one time her sister said that she had walked in. She went to see her. It was a dress on the, I believe the story is the dress was on the bed, but it was bloody.
And
her sister seen. You know, she never told that she had gotten into a fight with James. But, you know, Tammy could fight. She could fight now. She will take on a man if the man, you know, gets too abusive with her now.
Right.
Similar to my mother. My mother was a short woman, but she'll take you on if she has to.
Right. Yeah, I just wondered about some of them stories.
And she wasn't a tall woman either. She was a small one.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go further into the Motown stories. When Barry started, he had a crew of musicians. Now, let me tell you that of the Funk Brothers, see, we know the Funk Brothers as the musicians we've seen on television.
Correct.
That's how we kind of identified the Motown musicians as those guys. When actuality, the original Funk Brothers, it depends on how you look at it. Martha Jean McQueen actually named the Funk Brothers. They were at the Chit Chat Club. Martha was the DJ. And this particular group of musicians were the original Funk Brothers. The original Funk Brothers was Earl Van Dyke, James Jamerson, Ron White, and the drummer,
I can't think of his name.
Jones. Can't remember his first name, but his last name is Jones.
Okay.
And those were the original Funk Brothers. Now,
they were some bad boys.
They were bad, yeah. So those were the ones that Martha Jean named. Now, the Joe Hunter Band was the very first musicians to actually play at Motown.
Okay.
Now, amongst those Funk Brothers, the only original guys was Joe Hunter and James Jamerson. Because Benny Benjamin, he was a part of that group. Vita and Hank Crosby. He was a part of that group. There was about five members of him, and the group was the group was Joe Hunter's band. They were the original punk brothers. I'm sorry, they were the original band members that played at Motown. They weren't called the Funk Brothers then.
Okay.
If you had to identify the original Funk Brothers, those are the guys that played at the Chit Chat. In the movie version, they added the people that they wanted in to be the Funk Brothers. These are all musicians that played at Motown, and they called them the Funk Brothers because there was no other name to call them. The original name, oddly enough, was Earl Van Dyke and the Band.
Okay.
That was the original Funk Brothers name, Earl Van Dyke and the Band.
Okay.
You know, and when they went overseas, I think that's exactly what their name was then, Earl Van Dyke and the Band. Earl Van Dyke was the leader of the group. James Jameson was not the leader of the group. Earl Van Dyke was.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Now, when we're looking at the fact of, let's look at David Ruffin and the Temptations, not to take you off path, but let's look at that. And what do you think... outside of maybe drugs and situations like that, what do you think the problem was with the whole group? Because that Otis, I think, is the one that formed the group, if I'm correct.
It was a mixture of Otis Williams and the Distance and the Prime.
Okay.
So he was in the beginning of the group. But like Eddie Kendrick said, Eddie brought the lead singer, which was Eddie and Paul Williams.
Mm-hmm.
With the Distance, Richard Street was the lead singer. But he quit. And the two groups blended together once they all met. They blended together, and if originally they called themselves the Elgins, then they called, okay. Then they recorded as the Pirates.
Wow!
And then they eventually became the Temptations.
Now, in terms of the name, where did they get it from? Was something that was chosen by Barry and Smokey?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
No,
okay,
Smokey had nothing.
No, but it was
that
Barry.
That was a Barry creation.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure the band had something to do with it. You know, they may have created their own name, really, but I'm sure Barry had a lot to do with it. Now, let me also say, there was a white group called the Temptations before the Black Temptations.
Oh.
There was a white Temptations. There was a white Supreme.
Didn't know that.
You know, at that time, nobody thought about suing each other for the name, so... You know.
Right.
Wow. That is something.
I didn't know that.
I know, you'd never know that.
They could have sued the white, and I believe the white Temptations eventually did try to sue, but by that time, the Black Temptations were so popular that, you know, they had a lot of money to back them up, and the white Temptations, they didn't have that much money, and they didn't do that many gigs.
Right. So they had to step down on that. So what do you think the issue was with the vocalists in that group? Because I know that actually David Ruffin actually left for a minute, and Jimmy Russell came in. Am I correct on that?
No.
His brother came in. Or was that back?
No. His brother never came in. His brother was never part of the Temptation.
But now, didn't he do a song on there?
It not with the Temptation. He done a song by himself.
Hmm.
No, he never sung with the Temptation. And as a matter of fact, even if you look back through history, the Temptation's history, you'll never see his brother there. You will see Eldridge Bryant. Bryant was the original Temptation.
It seemed to me
David Ruffin took Eldridge Bryant's place.
Okay.
But nobody,
it seems like for some reason I seen Jimmy on a song. I don't know what song that was. What becomes of a broken hearted? Or was it one prior to that?
Broken hearted. Jimmy done his own thing. And What Becomes of a Broken Heart is that song. That particular song had a whole different name and a whole different singer.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And apparently, they didn't like it.
Hmm.
So Jimmy got the opportunity to come and sing the song, and I believe the song even had different words to it.
Okay, Jimmy sung on
that. That was his hit. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm like, I remember something about Jimmy. And that song popped up in my head. So, okay.
And he sang, there was a duet album that was done with him and his brother, David, also.
Okay.
They done a duet album. So, a lot of misinformation has circled. I mean, so much information. It's even hard to keep up with everything. But most of it is something that you have to sort of pick apart. And you have to pick it apart slowly because you may not understand one element. And you may not understand her element.
Okay.
As an example, one of the myths is that Barrett Gordy screwed his artist out of money. You know, that's the biggest one.
Okay.
But
let's go to commercial break first, and then we'll get to that because I want to get into that deep. So let's take the commercial break, and we'll be right back with Billy and Billy.
This is CRS Radio, the Knowledge Station. You are listening to Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy.
to think about immature things. You know, like, do you love me? Do you want me? Are you going to call me like you said you would? Is this really your real phone number? But you know, I'm a man now, baby, a grown man. And I came a long way. And a sin taught me one thing. Taught me to hold on to my love.
This is CRS Radio, the Knowledge Station. You are listening to Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy.
And you were just listening to Switch.
We are back, and I'm telling you, that is my boy Bobby, rest in peace, along with Tommy, rest in peace, and a shout-out to my great friend, Gregory Williams. And we're back with Billy and Billy. Billy, we're going to pick off where we left off at, which we're talking about. We're talking about the Temptations, and we're talking about Jimmy Ruffin, David Ruffin. And so let's pick up from there. In case the listeners that are just now chiming in, you're listening to the Motown show with the Motown Alumni Show with Billy and Friends, and Billy. So let's get back to the topic.
Okay, let me see. Let's go with Motown not paying the musician. That was false also. And you have to look at the history of music when you talk about that. Back in the day, musicians didn't get paid that much at all. As a matter of fact, most entertainers, singers, whoever the featured artists were, whether it be a group or a lead singer, they usually only got 2% of sales. That's 2% of the royalties. Now, in those days, 2% could have been 2 pennies. Pennies per 45 sold. Now, if you look at the price range of 45, they were usually 99 cents. Eventually in the 70s, they were $1.29 each. And Motown was a predominant seller of 45s. Even though they sold albums, the predominant of their sales were 45. So,
correct.
Since everybody got 2%, if you were part of a group, you got 2% too. But that might have been 2% of the 2% that the entire group got.
Right.
So how much money would you make then? Nothing.
Yeah.
You'd make that same money that Berry Gordy made when he was with Jackie Wilson.
Yeah, and that $3 check. Right, that $3 check. Now, let me say this. Go ahead. No, now,
well,
if you look at
Hang on. Let me add something else. If you are a major artist on a record, like Smokey, Muddy, Bad Nature, you might have made 4%. All major artists were making 4% then, including Elvis Presley. Okay, what's your question?
Oh, my thing was, you know, in terms of their expenses, my understanding was that they were getting paid back in those days $200 a week a piece. Am I correct on that? Motown was paying that? Or was that a part of their money, their advance? So
that was a part of their advance, yes.
Right, that's what I thought. Because a lot of it was the cars, the housing and stuff like that was a part of the advance. So, yeah, so they looked really good, but they weren't – who was doing the writing most of the time for them?
They had a lot of writers. The Holland, Doja Holland, everybody wrote.
Yep, yep, definitely.
Everybody except for the artist wrote.
Yes, yeah.
The artist,
I think that was like the golden rule, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Back then,
yeah.
Wasn't it kind of the golden rule?
They had a staff of writers, and the staff of writers, the reason for the staff. Now, keep in mind, Barry was a songwriter. So basically, he made the record company for the songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't make it for the artist. He made it for the songwriters. And
gotcha.
That's why he had a staff of songwriters.
Hmm.
You know, because he could relate to songwriters. Songwriters
right.
made the money. Artists didn't make that much money at all. Artists made money when they were on the road. And even with that, they go on the road. Barry didn't mind lending you money. He didn't advance you money for different things. He'd pay your electric bills and food bills or anything else you want. But that was advance money that came out of your royalty. Now,
mm-hmm.
if your royalty check wasn't that good, then this advance money was a great addition to your bank account.
Right.
But in most cases, most people got an advance. Most people paid for the things that they wanted. If they went on the road, they seen a fur coat and they want it. Barry Gordy didn't mind buying the fur coat.
Mm-hmm.
But the artists would come home, they might have only $100 in their pocket.
Gotcha.
And if you were a group, that $100 had to be split between the group.
Wow. Now, let me ask you this. As a writer, in those days, kind of percentages were they getting from Motown?
2%.
Really?
they were still getting 2%, yeah.
And
The writers didn't get an awful lot more either.
Okay, now Barry would get the publishing. Is that how that worked?
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, he'd get all the publishing.
He had all of the publishing. Yeah.
Okay, that's where the money's
at. The songs went into the kitty. You know, I think Doja House certainly got their 4%, but nobody got much more than that.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. Now, in terms of records coming out, was this a factor that they voted on different artists like The Temptations, Smokey, or whose release is going to come out? Is there any truth to that?
Yes. They had a group. They called it the... now my mind's going blank, but they had a particular group. They come in every Monday, I believe that's when the time it was. And it was usually the producers and the executives that chose which songs were supposed to go out.
Okay.
And Billie Jean Brown was one of the first people that chose the songs themselves, the songs that she thought was the best, because she had a good ear for music. And it was called Quality Control, the Quality Control Group. And the Quality Control Group would choose the song. They would vote on whose song should go out next. And of course,
that's what I heard.
Better had, if they chose the time of 9 o'clock in the morning, you had to be there at 9 o'clock, not 9:01. Because if you might be locked, you will be locked out at if you are not there at 9 o'clock. And of course,
okay.
People they'll beat on the doors, and they would call
right.
The ruckus. Because most people, if they particularly if your song is going to be chosen that day, of course you want to be there to vote on your song. And there were times when even Smokey was locked out.
Wow. Okay.
So he wasn't there to vote on his own song sometimes.
Okay. Another question is, when did they start actually giving Smokey and Stevie and these guys writers' rights? When did that come about?
Almost from the very beginning. I know Smokey for sure from the very beginning. But
okay.
You remember Berry Gordy is a songwriter.
Gotcha.
So
yep.
Anybody who produces records, they get writer's rights immediately.
Okay.
If you were a songwriter, you got writer's rights. There was a song, for example, the Marvelette, Please, Mr. Postman.
Right.
The original singer was Georgia Dobbins. She was the best singer in the group.
Oh.
And this is before they actually recorded the song. So what happened was they brought the song back. That Berry Gordy asked them, "Do you have a song?" They said, "No." They went back to Inkster and got this guy that wrote this song, but Georgia did not, she was the lead singer. She did not like the song that he wrote. She didn't like the words that he wrote. So she asked him whether she could borrow the title of the song, and she wrote new words. Please, Mr. Postman, this was about a guy that she used to like that was a postman.
Mm.
Oh, that's
interesting.
It basically talked about him.
Okay.
Oh.
They brought the song back. They sung the song. Everybody liked it. And the Marvel X got a contract. But the song, what happened was the song was given to a couple of the guys at Motown that were songwriters, and they changed it because Please Mr. Postman was a slow blues song.
Oh, wow.
They changed it to the up-tempo song that we hear today. But
gotcha.
getting back to the writer's part of it, Motown gave Georgia Dobbins co-writer's rights as well as the guy who actually wrote the song. So whoever, they wrote the song. The words that you hear, Georgia Dobbins created. And even though the guy only had the title, they still added him in as part of the writer's rights.
Oh, that was nice.
Wow.
That was nice.
And Georgia did get royalties.
Now, another thing, was the Chiffons a part of Motown?
No.
The group Chiffons? Oh, okay. I was thinking for some odd reason they were part of that. Okay.
No.
Okay.
No, not that I know of.
No, I was just kind of thinking on them for whatever reason. I thought maybe they were part of Motown.
Yeah, there's a lot of groups that were not a part of Motown, but sometimes different people would come out of that group and join Motown. They would come out of their group and join Motown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there were numerous major stars that done that.
Now, who would you say that actually did that, that was with another label?
Pointer Sisters.
Okay.
Anita Pointer.
Oh.
Okay.
She joined Motown. There were numerous people that end up being a part of the Laura Lee. She was with the Meditation Singers, the gospel group, the Meditation Singers.
Okay.
And she was with Rick Tick. Rick Tick. And she ended up singing for Motown.
Okay.
Wow.
Now, how was...
A whole lot of people.
Now, let me ask you this, Billy. In the Sounds of Philadelphia and Motown, there was kind of like a competition going there at one time?
Oh, no competition.
Okay.
Everybody followed Motown.
Okay, yeah.
The Sound of Philadelphia, what was great about them is they had great music.
They did.
But nobody...
They really did.
Nobody competed with Motown. No.
Okay.
They had great music. And yes, they all... Much of their music really stood out in the masses. But Motown did look at Philadelphia like they were competition. And, Motown had the arsenal of Negroes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who had that? Nobody.
Yeah, I mean, they really had a unique sound as well and a nice roster of artists as well as Motown.
Let me also say Motown catered a lot to the white public.
That they did.
They
still now today.
Philadelphia, they catered to black people.
Right.
There was no competition. There was no competition because white people was the popular... That's who Berry Gordy wanted to buy his music. Even though he said, I cater to the world. No, yeah, but they really catered to white people a lot. And
they still do.
Not as much today. But, and I'll get back to that. But one of the ways that they catered to white people is a structure they called the formula. And the formula are elements that they put in the music that white people could hear well. For example,
you hear the
tambourine and clapping, clap, 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 clap. You know, black people don't clap like that.
Right.
We clap on a two. We clap on a two and a four.
Right.
Two, three, four. That's how black people clap. White people, when we watch them on television, they always clap, 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 clap. Well, Holland Dozier Holland, who came up with this idea called the formula, they seen that white people done that, so their music clap, 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 baby, baby, clap,
clap, clap, clap.
Mm-hmm.
Come see about me, clap, 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 clap. It was the formula that triggered white people's psyche.
Brilliant.
And white America, they jumped all on top of it. I dare
they
say
really
that
did.
Young,
they really
young
did.
White children, young white children brought Motown into flourishing. It's young
yeah.
white, not young black people. Black people, you know, we respect our black people, but the problem is black people will grab a hold to the music. They'll like you for a moment, and they'll move on. And you better
yep.
come up with another, you better come up with another hit like 2 months later.
Exactly.
Or black people will move on, and they'll drop you. They'll drop you like dropping a nickel in a pond.
It's still the same way. I mean, the record gets old
yeah.
with black folks after about 2 weeks of rotation.
Yeah. So
we're,
in that perspective, see, white people hang on to their stuff. Look how
yeah.
long they've been hanging on to Elvis Presley.
Yep.
They
yep.
hang on. They go to Graceland in wheelchairs.
Mhm. That's right.
They hang on. And look at Northern Soul people. Northern Soul. Once they got hooked on the Negroes, they created a whole genre of music called Northern Soul music. A weekend, they do weekenders where they dance to black music all weekend long. Most of us can't last more than 3 hours at a club. Weekend,
right.
Northern Soul people, they will dance a whole week all night long. They
mm-hmm.
they come in the daytime, they will dance all night long, go to bed, eat a little something in the morning, go do tourism crap, then come back at night and dance some more all night long, and then go redo that over again 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a commercial break, and we're going to come back and pick up where we left off at. All right, this is CRS Radio.
This is CRS Radio, the Knowledge Station. You are listening to Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy.
Blazing sun, come on! When the blazing sun comes up, no escaping from the rays. Feel the fire is engulfing through the smoke and through the haze. I will leave you all amazed, got you digging your own grave in this revival. Top of rivals, there's no chance of your survival. To the throne I am entitled, and I'll strip you of your title. I'm the king, you are the peasant, there's no time for second guesses. I am dead, I'm a child from the God above. I am death, make it on my own, don't need no press. I am death, a future's fixed, to the top I'll grow. I am death, let this eating watch this giant grow. The need that I am feeding, what the industry is needing is me bluffing through the system to rejuvenate the rhythm. So much hell I'm going to give them as I'm busting out this prison. Listen as the unforgiving as I carry out the sin. Execution on the gallows, you're so angry and you're callous as the hammer. It is falling so horrendous and enthralling. Like a Roman gladiator, I'm the ultimate elator. As the crowd is going wild, now the casualties compile. Take you out with different styles, I'm a child of the heaven. And the sun god is a weapon, you'll be raised to get you tripping. And I burn you all to vapors, you're a flammable as paper as I'm pulling off this case, but got you evading the danger. Now you're drowning in confusion, you've been living in delusion, terrified, you're seeing clearly that you're never getting near me. I will beat you all severely, everyone is paying dearly, merely told you what I mean, and like a hyper beast is singing. Every angle getting covered, suffocated, and you're smothered by the power overtaken as the thunder lord of words. When the blazing sun comes up, no escaping from the rays, feel the fire, it's been gulfing through the smoke and through the haze. I will leave you all amazed, got you digging your own grave in this revival, top arrival, there's no chance of your survival. To the throne I am entitled. As I strip you of your title, I'm the king, you are the peasant, there's no time for second guessing. I am dead, I'm a child from the God above. I am dead, make it
crunch.
I am death.
My future's fixed till the top I'll go.
I am death.
Plant the seed and watch this giant grow.
Actually, I will attack you with this telekinetic vacuum. The reality of thinking brings a vision in a being. You're amazed by what you're seeing, not the average human being. And I wouldn't change a thing. Very different is the king. Won't be ducking when I swing. And I'll knock you out the ring on everything. That's what it is. Getting closer to the ledge. I will never lose my edge. Now you're falling to your doom. And you're doling down the stairs like a fool that's being red. With two holes up on his head. And I'm charging your defense. And you couldn't go the length. You don't equal to a tenth. I push the level to 100 in this battle that you wanna play. No game with opposition. Take you out. That is my mission.
Yeah. Play no games with opposition, take you off, that is my mercy.
When the blazing sun comes up, no escaping from the rays. Feel the fire is engulfing through the smoke and through the haze. I will leave you all amazed, got you digging your own grave. In this revival, topple rivals, there's no chance of your survival. To the throne I am entitled, as I strip you of your title. I'm the king, you are the peasant, there's no time for second guessing.
I am death,
I'm a child from the God above.
I am death,
make it on my own, don't need no crutch.
I am death,
my future's fixed, to the top I'll go.
I am death,
plant the seed and watch this giant grow. When the blazing sun comes up, no escaping from the rays. Feel the fire is engulfing through the smoke and through the haze. I will leave you all amazed, got you digging your own grave. In this revival, top of rivals, there's no chance of your survival. To the throne I am entitled, and I strip you of your title. I'm the king, you are the peasant, there's no time for second guessing.
I am death,
I'm a child from the God above.
I am death,
make it on my own, don't need no crutch.
I am death,
my future's fixed, till the top I'll go.
I am death,
let it see and watch this giant grow.
I am death, sir.
I've been watching you, boy, for a long, long time. Oh.
This is CRS Radio, the Knowledge Station. You are listening to Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy.
And we are back. We're back with Billy and Billy. This is an amazing show. I think a lot of people are learning a lot from this information from the past, because it may help some artists in the future to understand what the mortar and brick is all about in building something of this magnitude. So I'm going to send you back to Billy, and we can follow up on what we were talking about earlier. If you left, we're actually talking about some of the artists of Motown and some of the lies and truths of Motown. So, Billy, take it over.
Well, all right now. Well, I think we're talking about the artists getting screwed over by Barry. Now, let me also address that their contracts, even though Barry's contract was actually standard, was a standard contract, but there were a couple of things in the contract that was interesting. For example, a couple of people breached their contract. And Barry, there was a provision that was put in the contract. Okay, you can breach your contract. You don't even have to honor your contract. But if you do that, all of your royalties will stay with the company, and you won't get any royalties from your records, from any records. Now, there were a couple of people that done that, a few people, and the effects of it was devastating. Mary Wells, as an example, she wanted to drop the contract, but the lawyer, her first lawyer, went there. And Barry Gordy just showed him around. He said, look, she's not going to get anywhere similar to what we got, what we're giving her, which he was actually right. He showed them around. He showed them the facility. He showed what he had to offer. The lawyer went back and said, if I were you, I'd stay with the company. Mary said, you're fired. She got another guy to come in.
Mm-hmm.
He was, that the other guy wasn't convinced, and actually Mary made it in very specific that she doesn't want to stay with the company. So the problem, Mary was Barry's, one of Barry's biggest artists at the time. She was very big in the company. Barry, in fact, she was Barry had thought about closing the company up. That's how big she was.
Wow.
But as she walked away, I believe she jumped on another label, they gave her about $1 million. She didn't do well, but she didn't do well whatsoever.
Right.
And she's not the first that has happened, but that was a terrible thing for her. But the problem that she had was she wasn't making enough money at Motown to even pay all of her bills well, and she was one of the most popular artists at the company. She was the most popular artist at the company. So other artists, such as Florence Ballard,
from the Supreme, she done the same thing. She just left the company.
Mm-hmm.
The company didn't sue her for breach of contract because basically she was kicked out of the Supreme. Now, the company would have kept her as an artist, but she didn't want to have anything to do with Motown, nothing to do with the Supreme. Wasn't until later her and Mary sued Motown. Neither one of them won.
Hmm.
And we all know the rest of the history. You know, Mary Wells, she died of throat cancer. Florence, she just died at a very, very, very young age, like 35 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Really?
So, but now, mind you, Florence did jump on another label. She did have another recording, but it just, all of their recordings failed.
Mm.
And they failed miserably.
Well, let me ask you this one, Billy. In terms of the Supremes, because we know what's going on with the background singers, but was Diana Ross really the best singer out of all of them, or was that just a ploy with Berry Gordy because he was seeing her at one point in time?
He wasn't seeing her in the very beginning.
No.
Florence probably had the richest voice, but Diane had the most marketable voice.
Okay.
Hmm.
See, black man. In a lot of cases, we threaten white people. As far as our talent and other things of that nature at that time.
Right.
So, you know, there's a certain tone that white people can adhere to. They don't like the gospel-ish sound. If you sound like you come from a gospel church, they don't like that.
Right.
And it was something that, and Florence's voice had such a rich sound that it wasn't the kind of prissy sound that white people liked. Because she had a rich sound to her voice. Mary had a nice sound, but Mary wasn't trying to pursue being a soloist either. She was happy just being a background singer. But Mary could sing, as we found out later on, once she got her own act. She was an excellent singer. But Diane had a voice that catered, it was somewhat multicultural. You know, black people didn't necessarily appreciate her voice, but they did. Young black girls did. Young black girls, they wished that they were Diana Ross. And they wished they could do Diana Ross. You know, they used to get in the mirror just to do Diana Ross. But Diana was, she was a famous amongst the masses. And as time had gone on, and I've said this many times over, I think she's more beautiful now than she was back then.
Who, Diana?
I think she's more beautiful now than she was then.
Yeah, she wasn't that attractive back then at all. I mean, she's very skinny, but back then everybody was skinny.
To me, she was attractive. But maturity done her well. You know,
yes.
she looks really good. She's
she's very, very attractive now. You know, some women, as they get old, we hear the stories about women getting older quicker than men, older looking quicker than men.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's the case, but, you know, I'm a firm believer black don't crack.
Oh, no doubt.
So,
no doubt.
So, you know, there's a regalness that comes with black women. White women don't always have that in their DNA.
No,
but black women got a certain regalness that you just can't deny. You know, all they have to do is keep themselves up a little bit. If they at least keep themselves together a little bit, they're going to have some swag to them. And Diane is a great example of that. You know, she kept herself together. She didn't totally fall apart. You know, she washed her face when she's supposed to, you know.
Right. Right.
She didn't let her skin all dry up and, you know, get all crusty looking.
Right.
You know.
Let me ask you this one, Billy.
You know, Billy, I think most black women battle oily skin rather than dry skin. I think that's what keeps the skin smooth. No wrinkles. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree.
Many do.
Yeah. I got a question for you. Now, if you had, let's go to the earlier days of Motown, and let's say that you had a label and you had an opportunity to get five of their acts, which ones would they be if it was your label and they were available? And I'm talking about in developmental stage.
Five of the Motown acts?
Yep.
First of all, I had to have good songwriters. That's the first thing, just like Barry got.
Okay.
And then I'll get the acts.
Okay.
I'd have to do it exactly as Barry does. He got good songwriters. Then he got the acts.
Okay.
So if
let's say the,
if I
let's,
if I had to pick five acts, Marvin Gaye would be one. Of course, Smokey and the Miracles would be two.
Okay.
Mary Wells would be three.
Okay.
Stevie Wonder would be four.
You got one more.
And my personal favorite would have been Martha Reeves.
Martha Reeves. Okay.
Oh.
Okay. Well, if it was me, and my five would be Smokey Robinson, it would be Marvin Gaye, it would be, it would be Stevie, and that's what, three? Then it would be, let's see, who else would it be? Then it would be, I would have to say Supremes. And the last but not least would be, that's a good one. I would have to say Martha Reeves because of the fact that she was really hot back in the day with dancing. That was her Dancing in the Street song, wasn't it?
Yeah, back in the day, now Martha was hitting.
Yeah,
my baby loves me, and
didn't she do Dancing in the Street? Dancing in the Street.
Jimmy Mac.
Yeah.
You know, those were the jam back then, Jack.
Right.
Oh yeah.
So. Let me ask you this. What we're going to have on next week, what we're going to do next week, so the audience would know? what to look forward to?
I'm trying to get Frida Payne off.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll have Frida Payne, and hopefully have her. That'd be a good one to have. We're going to have many more things coming on Billy and Billy on the Motown alumni chat. So we're going to actually have a great time. But before we go to a commercial break, Denise, is there anything that you want to ask Billy?
Oh, I'm just listening and enjoying. I'm enjoying everything. I know along the way I've been like, with my little comments, but, you know, yes, I've been enjoying the conversation and learning a lot about Motown that I didn't know. So I'm enjoying myself.
You know what? I feel the same way. I feel the same way because I learned a lot just off and missed things that I thought I knew that I didn't know. So what we're going to do, Billy, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back with Billy and Billy. So people, audience out there, hold your seats. We'll be right back.
This is CRS Radio, the Knowledge Station. You are listening to Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy.
Yeah. Can I get a little bit more?
Please give me just a little of it before you leave town. I know this time is busy. Let me get it just one more time.
I see your bags are packed and you're standing by the door.
Just one more time.
I know I done you wrong.
Please give me just a little.
If you
This is CRS Radio, the Knowledge Station. You are listening to Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy.
And we are back. And any closing words?
Well, my closing words is real simple. Things that you have imagined about a black man in a white man's world, you have to leave it into its own area, because there's great truth in understanding what it meant to be black in the 60s. Prejudice was prominent. Prejudice in the music industry was prominent. Motown had an all-white marketing staff that helped them to navigate through the music industry. They didn't have any black people till 1968, when Miller London came in and was a part of the company. Prejudice was important then, so the difficulties of being black was real. So always remember that when you're dealing with Motown, just understand that perspective. And Barry was the biggest black entrepreneur in the world. But he had to manipulate his way through the white prejudice and white culture to become that big entity. That's all I got to say.
Well said. Well said. Right now, though, I wanted to ask another question, but I know that's all you have to say, because I wanted to ask another question with Billy, of course. And it was, you know, all of these things, you know, the racism and everything that was happening in the 50s and the 60s, do you think too, Mr. Billy, that kind of formed, you know, it kind of formed the American culture itself, even though, you know, it was hard times, it formed the way that everybody had written their songs and everything. Do you think that played a big part too during the time of, you know, when blacks was getting voting rights and all of this other things that happened? You think that the music, of course, Motown formed American music itself, but do you think that played a part in helping the black Americans to get civil rights?
Yes, as a matter of fact, Motown was a significant part of developing the psyche of white America. Because, see, at the time, I mean, there were black groups and black people that were somewhat popular. Nat King Cole, he was popular amongst the white women, a lot of white women. White men did not like him that well, because their women were kind of swooning over this chocolate man. And Sam Cooke, he was just a crooner of crooners, you know. He was good looking. He was a great entrepreneur. He was always kind and polite. You know, they were swooning over him too.
Very true.
The Platters. You know, the Platters had a style about them that was very. They came along before all of the Motown people, but they helped to start that cultural look. That classy perspective. Motown music
Berry Gordy meant for his music to be love song music. You know, you might have a tragedy in the beginning, but by the end of the song, there's some happiness that comes out the end of the song. That's the kind of music Berry Gordy wanted to make his entire time, till Marvin Gaye came along and started talking about the troubled times that we have at that time.
Right.
The
yeah.
trials and tribulations of war and how terrible it is, but, you know.
Well,
yeah.
on that note, let's take and leave out here on that note, and we're going to be back next week at the same time, same station, and we will have more updates of what's yet to come. Billy, we appreciate everything that you've done to bring this station to where it's at now. We've got a lot of things going on. And Denise, do you have a quick note on who's on tomorrow?
Oh, let me pull that up. As a matter of fact, we have, and let me pull up. I'm sorry, I'm like...
Haven't
it right in front of me. I have to go into our CRS.
I know Tim is on tomorrow. Tim's
yeah,
on from
TJ.
6 to 8, right?
Right. Let me look at the lineup. I know that I have to look at the lineup, and I do apologize that
okay,
I didn't
that's okay.
hold up.
Well,
yeah.
I know that
so, but
Tim
I know
is on
that TJ, he, right. And so what I do see tomorrow, well, is that tomorrow? Let's see. I know that the comedy chat is going to be coming up as well Friday at 12 p.m.
Friday.
Noon. And, yeah, right. That's going to be a Friday. And then we have... of course, today was Legend with Billy and Billy. That's a Friday, and we're going to also have, of course, my show coming up, and, you know, this coming Sunday at 4 p.m., I have a surprise, very special guest. He's a lawyer,
okay.
Gerald and Merle Sternberg. They're with the African-American Jewish Friendship Group. And then we have Talk Israel. And Talk Israel is going to be talking about the upcoming new fashion show. And her, Anya Faber, she's going to be on Sundays at 1 p.m. And also, you know, it's a great, great lineup of
yes.
all the programs. I'll be better
okay.
prepared next time.
And Tim will be on from 6 to 8 with his jazz show on the Tim Jazz yes. Show chat. So let's take us out, Denise, and we'll see everybody next week. We appreciate everybody listening in, and much love from me and Billy. Let's go.
All right.
Bye.